Gospel, now for the third Sunday of Easter, is Luke 24:13-35. Jesus is meeting a conversation and encounter with the disciples on the road to Emmaus. Raymond Brown points out that this is actually the longest of all the canonical resurrection stories, although the one that will follow in Luke will build closely on it, so the two are related there, and the second one assumes a lot of what's happened already in the first one. I think before we even begin, it's important to keep the whole chapter of 24 in mind as our context. The reader of Luke has already heard the Easter proclamation of the angels, and he's heard about the discovery of the empty tomb, and even that the report of that discovery only resulted in continued unbelief on the part of the disciples. They dismissed the good news as nonsense. But I think it's especially important here to keep in mind that in Luke, no one has yet seen the risen Jesus. And I think the lectionary disguises that and then actually gives a different cast to the whole story here, and I want to try to come back to that at the end if we can. This is a favorite story of, I think, just about everyone in terms of Jesus' appearance. Commentators note how Luke's storytelling ability really shines here, but I think what amazes us is the way it actually happened, with the irony, even the sort of loving humor that Jesus shows toward these disciples, but certainly his care in bringing them to an understanding of these things that have happened. So with that as our introduction, let's start at verse 13 of chapter 24 in Luke. Kaiadu dia ex auton en aute te hemera. Okay, so you have the familiar to most of us, kind of particle here, idu, behold, look, here introducing a new development that's going to prove to be quite surprising. So we've heard about the women going to the tomb and not finding the body, and so on. Now, the text continues, duo ex auton, two of them. To have X stand for the partitive genitive is very common, but what's the referent for auton? What's its antecedent? Here, Fitzmyer suggests that, well, he even translates it, two of them, that is, the larger group of disciples. Later, one of these two will be named, Cleopas, who is not named as one of the 11. So it makes sense that the auton would be referring back to verse 9, when it says the 11 were gathered there with all the others. So the auton is referring back to the loipois of verse 9. So two of this larger group of Jesus' followers, en aute te hemera, here en points to a time when something happens, and in this case it's a specific time, on the very day, here almost in the sense of the same day, although you know aute would be in a different position for that, but the very day that they've just been talking about. Okay, so on that day, which has been our Easter Sunday. Eisan koruamenoi. Here you have just the periphrastic imperfect with the participle in place of the imperfect verb of peruamai. So they were traveling ace coming to or toward a village, and a village or a small town. Ap ekuzan stadius hex e conta apa Jerusalem. Here ap echo. It's the feminine participle, and you've got a lot of feminine participles in this text. You have to reorient your eyes to those endings. Here, op echo means to be at a distance from something. And a stayed is about let's just say a little over 600 English feet. So the distance here is about 7 miles. So a small village in the immediate environs then of Jerusalem. So the focus of the action isn't ready to leave Jerusalem yet, even though these disciples are trying to sort of take the action out that way. And then he anima emmaus. The dative of the relative pronoun there might throw you off a little bit, but this is really a possessive dative. You can supply the verb is, the name is to it, or something like that. But it's really the equivalent, and we'll see this later, of the dative of anima, by name. So the name of which is Emmaus. I will simply point you to the commentaries for discussions about where this village might be or have been. Bedag lists three possible sites. Fitzmyer discusses the same three with a little more detail. Neither one of them either try to come to a decision or suggest that any kind of confidence is possible in identifying the site. I think Fitzmyer is right to think they're headed to a small village. The feast is over. They're going home. But it's not time for them to leave Jerusalem yet. Okay, verse 14. Kai autoi omilun pros alelus peripanton ton sembebe katon tuton. And they, homilun from homileo, as you might guess from the connection with homiletics, is just to speak about something, to converse. And here's the imperfect, so you get the picture. They're traveling along the road, and as they're doing this, they are talking proselelus to each other, and with peri giving them the topic, concerning all the sembebe katon, all these things that had happened, from simbino. Remember, when you're going to look this up, that the sun, the new, changes to a mu before the beta. So it's sigma upsilon mu that you want to look up here. So the things that had happened. I think Fitzmyer makes a good point here when he draws our attention to this very neutral word in contrast to the way Luke begins his gospel. Not just with things that have happened, but things that have been fulfilled among us. So they're obviously looking at these simply as current events, not as the fulfillment of God's purpose or promise. Okay, so kai egenita, and then a few words later you'll see kai. This again is a very typical Lucan formula. The Dag says sometimes it's omitted. Older English versions say, and it came to pass. But this is, a septuagintal form for moving the narrative on. But Luke is not only telling the story, he's doing it in very intentional biblical language here. So it came to pass, en to hamilein. Here you have the same verb now as an infinitive with in. So while they were talking, in their conversation, kai sudzetain, another word for discussion. So perhaps the two suggest it was somewhat animated, I don't know, talking back and forth with each other. Kai autos Jesus, and Jesus himself, and here the autos is emphatic. You don't need it with the proper name for Jesus. But Luke, of course, wants to reassure us that this was Jesus, even though they didn't recognize him at first. Engisos sineporuita autoi. Having drawn near, probably from behind them, so catching up with them, so to speak, he then was walking with them or traveling along with them. Luther makes a good comment in one of his sermons about the care that we see Christ showing to these two weak believers. He does everything to help them in their weakness and strengthen their faith, knowing how troubled they are. And he says he suddenly joins them as if after his resurrection he had nothing else whatever to do. So this is how he will spend his Easter Sunday. 16, a note for us as readers so that we understand what follows. Hoida ophthalmoi auton, but their eyes ekratunta to me epignonai auton. Kratcheo is to really to grab hold of something here in the sense of restrain. Their eyes are, so to speak, held back, or we might even think held shut. They're controlled so that, in the infinitive here of purpose, with a negative, of course, they are controlled so as to not recognize him. And here you see the force of the epi and epigenosko, someone they knew before, they don't recognize him when they see him again. Then verse 17, apenda pros autus, but he said, that is, Jesus said to them, to the two men, tines hoi logoi hutoi. That is, what are these words, these this conversation, either tines as the simple interrogative, or perhaps what sort of things are these you're talking about? Hitzmeyer translates it simply, what is all this talk? And then hus, referring back to logoi, these words which antibolita, you're in a sense sort of throwing at each other here, which again I think suggests a kind of animated discussion, but it's commonly used for exchanging views in a conversation. So the anti, like our antiphonal. Prosalelus, so you're exchanging, discussing with each other, peripatuntes, as you're out walking along here. Kai estathesan skithropoi. Estathesan is the aorist passive of histemi, and you remember how much trouble this verb gives you, but here the context answers most of the questions. It's clearly intransitive, there's no object, and they were walking along and they stop in their tracks. They suddenly stand still. So here it just means that. So they stood still, skithropoi. This is an interesting compound from skithros, which means sullen or kind of gloomy, and opes, old classical word for face. So they stopped gloomy-faced. So it's really not so much shock or surprise that we might think of it as who could not have heard these things, but they're almost, in a sense, disgusted that someone would have to ask them what they're talking about. So sadness, a bit of a dark attitude. In verse 18, this gloomy facedness will take expression in words. Apokrithes, typical word for responding here. Responding, eis onomati, or heis onomati kleopas. So one of them responding, and one by the name of Cleopas, apen pros auton, said to him, to Jesus. Cleopas is a commonly seen Greek name. It's often used for the Semitic Clopas, even though etymologically there's no relationship there. There's a lot of discussion. Is this the same as the Clopas who's mentioned in other passages? Some will argue yes. In fact, it's been an ancient discussion. I'm not quite convinced yet that the two are the same man. Baucom, in his recent book, Jesus and the Eyewitnesses, tries to present the argument that it is. It's certainly possible. It's one of the circle of Jesus' followers. But I think Baucom does a good job in suggesting that this one is named because he's probably the source of this story. Certainly none of the 11 could have given this to Luke. So how would he have learned of this encounter? He could have gotten a general report of it in the sense of that, you know, the 11 and the others heard about it. But to get the details of the conversation suggests that he's getting his information from someone who was there. Okay. And continuing, verse 18. Sou manos paroi kais, Jerusalem. This will end up being a question. Are you the only one who's dwelling either or living near Jerusalem there for the festival or even a resident? There's a lot of discussion on the exact form of paroi keo here. I don't think we have to decide that to see the force of the question. Would include anyone who spent the past few days in Jerusalem, permanent resident or temporary traveler. Are you alone, were you living in Jerusalem, kai uk egnos, and you didn't know here in the aorist, in the sense of find out, come to learn of, hear about ta genomena, the things which happened in her, that is in Jerusalem, in these days, meaning these past several days. So here you have N with time, when it's not so much a specific point of time, but happening within a specified period. Okay, verse 19. Kai apen autois, and he said to them, hoya. What things? What sort of things? Itzmeyer says it's a leading question, and they take the bait. And it's interesting that Jesus is the one who's driving the whole story from the moment he appears until it reaches its conclusion. He looks like he doesn't know what's going on, and we know he's the only one who actually knows what's going on. It's a little late, but this would have been a handy word in summer Greek. Right? Whenever your professor asks you something, you could have just said, poia. What? What are you talking about? Okay. Hoi de apon auto. And now both of them join in, but they said to him, ta peri Jesu tu Nazarenu. That is ta pragmata, the things, ta genomena, the things that happened. Concerning Jesus, the one from Nazareth, the Nazarene, hos egeneta aner prophetes. Who, that is Jesus, egeneta here, Creed suggests, and I agree that this is more than just was, but showed himself to be, or proved to be, aner prophetes. That's a strange combination of nouns, a man, a prophet. It is biblical language. There's a place in Judges where it says, and the Lord sent a man, a prophet, to the sons of Israel. And that's certainly the category that these two are putting Jesus in. But from Luke's point of view, it also stresses the fact that they're still looking at Jesus as on air, a man. Okay, so a man, a prophet, let's see, my place here, genitos in ergo kai logo, and on tion tu theu. So genitos here is capable, competent, Bedag suggests even distinguish yourself in a particular area. So it was outstanding in deed and word, and on tion before God. So not just in the judgment of humans, but in God's presence. And Fitzmyer again reminds us that Luke is the only New Testament author who uses enantheon, although it too can be found in the Septuagint. So before God and tantos tou lou, and all the people, here I think meaning specifically all the people of Israel. 20, then hapos te paredokon auton. And this was a slightly unusual use of hapos, just in the sense of how. That is, haven't you heard how they did this, or even that they did this. So this is continuing in sort of fragmentary sentences, their story, their summary of what happened in Jerusalem these last few days. So how paredokon, the paradidomi, the gospel word for betrayal or handing over, how they both have handed him over, that is, the high priests and our rulers. So they're the subjects of the verb paredokon. So how our, so the high priest and our rulers handed him over eis krimathanatu, to a judgment of death or a sentence of death. That is, they betrayed him to be sentenced to death or to a death sentence. Kai estauroson auton. And they crucified him. So this will, although their understanding is incomplete, this same kind of description will show up again and again in the sermons in Acts. They put him to death, but God raised him. So here, it's essentially the Sanhedrin, the high priestly members and their rulers betrayed Jesus, and that's the result. 21, Temes de el Pidzomen, here it's those nice payoffs of learning the Greek tenses. We were hoping, that is, this had been our hope all along, with the suggestion that they are not still hoping that. But we were hoping, with hoti here gives the content, so this is indirect discourse, autos estin. And remember, you have to do that back shift of tenses when you're translating into English. So if it's present, since it's hoping in the imperfect that he was ha melon lutruspai ton Israel, the coming, the one coming to redeem Israel. And as Bedag points out, melo is often used really to paraphrase the future tense with forms that are disappearing, like the infinitive or the participle. So you don't see many future participles or infinitives, but this is, he was going to come and do this, to redeem or set free Israel. Allah Gekhai, an emphatic combination of particles here, a transition, but in a strong sense, sort of not so much contrast, but almost as if that's not enough. Indeed, sin tas in tutois, along with all of this, or in addition to, or even apart from all that. So here, giving something unexpected and catching us up then to the present moment. And unfortunately, the rest of the verse is not so easy to decode here. The main verb is age, and the question is, what is its subject? It's a time reference because you have the third day. The two possibilities are that it's impersonal, so sort of time has brought us to the third day already. Usually translated, this is now the third day. The other possibility is that you have a personal subject who's spending time, with here it being understood that Jesus has now spent the third day. There's a little more evidence for that outside the New Testament, but I think it's very awkward here and just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. They're certainly convinced that Jesus is dead. It seems very strange that they would talk about how he's been passing the last 3 days. So I still go with the impersonal use here. So this is the third day off who, from which tauta agenita, these things happened. Alakai, now continuing the surprising contrast, and almost moreover, however and, or however also, genaikes tenis ex haemon, some women from us, and here the us must still be that larger group of Jesus' disciples, so some women from among our group, ex estazon haemos. Now we often translate this as sort of startled or surprised us, but it really has more of a connection with confused. You put a person in a situation where sort of nothing makes sense and you can't figure out what's going on. So it's almost an attack of your presuppositions here. You've been forced out of your situation of thinking you knew what was going on. So in that sense, to confuse or astound us. Genomenai, or thrinai, epi pa nemeon. So here's genomai with epi, where it means you change your place geographically, not your condition. But so or thrinai means early in the morning, and it's usually translated as an adverb, but notice it is a feminine plural adjective, and the word itself means something like up early, from orthos, you get up, you're not lying down anymore. So I think it probably would be better translated, and they being up early went to the tomb. So not simply that it was early in the morning, but they got up early in order to do this. Chaime Hirusai, and here again you see one of those feminine participles, and not finding his soma, here in the classical sense of corpse or a dead body, not finding his corpse, aelphon, they came, legusai, again another feminine participle, with an infinitive, so almost in the sense of claiming to have seen, saying to have seen, and even claiming to have seen a vision of angels. Now this is retelling what the reader has already seen in Luke, where these were identified as men. But men of a very unusual appearance. Their clothes were glowing and so on. So here, as they summarize it, they're identified as angels, messengers from God. Heora kenai is the perfect infinitive of horao, so to have seen. That was their claim, claiming to have seen a vision of angels. Who, now hoi masculine, that is the angels, who said, Auton Zane, he is alive, he is living, or even he has come back to life. So that's the present infinitive of Zao, which has a very unusual pattern of contraction. Again, context will help point you in the right direction if you're trying to figure out what in the world that is. So these angels were saying that he is alive. 24. Kai ap eilthon tenes ton sun hemin. And again, some from our group, some of those with us, doesn't say of the 11, so not necessarily to be equated with Peter and John running to the tomb, although it could include that. So they went out, epitom, Nemeon, to the tomb, and Chiron, and they found Houtos Kathos. They found it thus just as, so you have the two combined, that is, they found everything just the way the women said. Autonde. Notice the emphatic position of auton. But him, uk adon, they did not see. Okay, and the him there, clearly Jesus. Kai autos apen pros autus. And Jesus, apen, said to them, O ano etoi, O foolish ones, imperceptive ones, unintelligent. This is the opposite of sophos, and here used as a vocative, speaking to them directly. O foolish ones, and brades te cardia. Slow in heart means dull in understanding or perception, which is, again, explaining in what way they're foolish. But the infinitive then will explain in what way they are slow. So slow in heart to believe, epipasen hois. Or even here, I think, to put your faith in with epi, to trust in all that the prophets had said or said. Elalesan, from Laleo there, the heiress. So slow to believe all that the prophets said. Uhi, sort of strengthened form of uk. Remember, this expects a positive answer. It's true, isn't it, that it is necessary at day from day. Now in the imperfect here, it was necessary. Followed by an infinitive and an accusative subject, that the Christ experience these things or suffer, endure, undergo them. And enter into his glory, eistein doxon autou. So isn't all of this necessary? And of course Luke uses the verb deo more than any other evangelist, 11 times. He uses it, Matthew and Mark each use it only once. And much of the theology of the whole gospel is connected with this idea of the necessity of God's purpose or plan, God's will being carried out. So this was necessary. Kai arxamenos apa moiseos, and then beginning from, apa giving you the point of origin here, beginning from Moses and from all the prophets, the er menusen, he sort of thoroughly explained, made it understandable, interpreting to them in pases tes graphis, in all the scriptures, ta peri autu, the things concerning himself. Now, verse 28, kai engison estein komen hu eporuanta. So now they've continued walking, and all three of them are drawing near, approaching the village who, genitive of the relative pronoun here actually becomes an adverb of place. So to the village where they were traveling, or to which they were traveling. Kai autos pros epoiesata poroteron poruestai. And he, of course, Jesus here is one who's always singled out as autos. Pros poieo, to act as if you're going to do something. To, in a sense, pretend, but not in the sense of deception here, but turned as if you were going to continue poroteron, to go farther. which is in a sense a polite way of leaving the two men to decide whether they're going to ask him to stay or not. And they do. Verse 29, Kai Parabiasanta, they prevail upon him, they urge him strongly, saying, Menon Methamon, the imperative active there of Meno, remain with us, Hoti Pras Hesperon Estin, because, Hoti there in the causal sense, it is already toward evening, getting toward evening, Kai Keklipin Ede He Hemera, the day has already declined. The day is lying down. It's far spent, almost over. Kai Es Eilfen to Mene Sun Autois, and he went in to remain with them. 30. Now Kai Egenita, here we have another announcement, and you can see this isn't simply to carry on the story, but this is, now we're actually getting to the important thing. What's important isn't that he stayed, but what happened when he stayed. So it came to pass in the Kata Klithene Auton, the reclining, the activity of reclining at table, that's the aorist passive infinitive, with Jesus then as the subject, in his reclining at table metauton with them. Now labon ton arton eulogesen kai klossos epididu autois. So two participles and then our main verb. So having taken the bread, that's participle, finite verb, participle, finite verb. So having taken the bread, he blessed the bread, or God who provided the bread, either way it amounts to the same meaning. He pronounced a blessing over it, and having broken it, he gave it to them. Autonde de noikthesan hoi aphthalmoi. Again, auton in a very emphatic position there, that is, of these two, their eyes were opened. Kai ep egnosan auton. Here we have the same verb and the opposite of the process. And notice both were described as passives. Their eyes were prevented and now their eyes are opened. And in both cases, almost certainly divine passives. So their eyes were opened and they recognized him. Kai autos aphantos egenita ap auton. And he, here with egenita, became invisible from them. He disappeared from them. Kai apon pros alelus. And they said to one another, Uhi he cardia hemon, kai omene en ein en humin. It's true, isn't it? A very emphatic question, expecting the yes, of course kind of answer. That our heart was burning. It was lit on fire inside us. Hos elale hemin en te hado, as he was speaking to us on the road. Hois de enoigen hemin. Tas graphos, as he opened to us the scriptures. Notice the connection now of these three things, the opening of the eyes, the breaking of the bread, and the opening of the scriptures. Then quickly we can finish up. Kai anastantes aute te hora. And getting up at that, again, that very hour, hip estrepson eis Jerusalem, they returned from hip estrepo to Jerusalem. And his sermon, Luther says, Where the gospel is not known, one cannot be silent. It's impossible that it shouldn't be proclaimed to everyone. So even though they had told Jesus it's too far to go on, the day's late, now this is more important than the fact that night has fallen. So Kai Huron, Aphrois Menus, Tus Hendeka, Kai Tus Sin Autois. So when they returned to Jerusalem, they found the 11 still assembled or assembled from Athroizo, perfect passive participle, the 11 and those with them. So this larger gathering of disciples around the 11, Legontos, and here I think the subject of this has to be the 11, saying that ontos egerthe ha kyrios, the Lord really is risen. He is risen indeed. Kai ophe simoni, and he appeared to Simon, or was seen by Simon. And that appearance is not narrated here, but it's mentioned both by Luke and Paul. Kai autoi exegunta ta en te hago, kai hos egnoste autois in te clause tu artu. And they, ex a geomai, they narrate, they describe, they relate the things along the road, that is what happened along the road, and especially as they recognized, or he was known to them in the breaking of the bread. Thank you for enduring that long reading, even though it's a wonderful resurrection gospel. I just wanted to make one point in closing here. Of course, there's a lot of discussion. Is this a celebration of the Eucharist? Did Luke intend, or did Jesus intend them to see it as that? And of course, it's one of those questions that needs to be answered carefully from the perspective of a variety of audiences. The two men at the table with Jesus, the reader of Luke, and so on. The point that I think is really significant to keep in mind here is that the lectionary, I think, often sort of disguises or masks the situation in this text. We want to rush immediately to appearances of the risen Jesus, but you notice that the evangelists do not. They are almost exasperating in their postponing of anyone actually seeing Jesus. Now, when we read this, I think we end up thinking the problem is that the disciples don't believe the women. And actually, if you've already had accounts of the women seeing Jesus or others seeing Jesus, you think that's the primary thing that's happening here. But I think you can see the way Luke is telling this, the problem isn't that they don't believe the women. The problem is that they don't believe the scriptures. They don't believe God's word, because the empty tomb was the sign that those things that had been promised had taken place. So it's not so much we need proof that he actually rose, but if God promised that he was going to do this in all the prophets, why didn't you believe as soon as the tomb was empty? And I think that's an important lesson for us too, that our problem isn't so much, I mean, the fundamental problem is not believing other human witnesses to God, but not believing God himself in what he's told us through his prophets in his scriptures.